Hello, this is Josh Ranger, co-host of the More Podcast, Less Process Podcast. And I'd like to welcome you to a special holiday slash empty out the trash bin of 2013 edition of the podcast. The content here consists of some brief interviews done on the spot at a couple of recent events, so I'm just letting Jefferson off the hook on this one, and I will be popping in briefly to give a little setup to each section. These interstitials may sound a little different also because I'm recording it in the bathroom. Our Midtown Manhattan office funnels up the noise from street level, including two fire stations and one police precinct that were between Love New York. So I needed somewhere quiet, but I'm also thrusting myself into the tradition of Booker T and the MGs, Weird Al, and others who have taken advantage of the acoustic qualities of tiled restrooms. You know, some people have greatness thrust upon them and some thrust themselves into it. And also, FYI, the vinyl release of this podcast will drop early next year. So I may have to pause if someone comes into the other stall, but, you know, I guess we'll cross that bridge when we come to it. So this first group of interviews took place at the New York Archivist Roundtable Annual Award Ceremony, which is a culminating ceremony of New York Archives Week here in New York City, which is part of Archives Month. So that took place back in October, and I went around carrying my podcast gear and stuck my microphone in people's faces and asked them questions about who they were and what they did and what they do in archives, and just to see what would happen. So I hope you enjoy. So this is Josh. I'm at the New York Archivist Roundtable Award Ceremony, and I'm standing here with, who is this?
My name is Ryan Anthony Donaldson, and I'm the Vice President of the Archivist Roundtable.
Is that a full-time job for you?
Depends on how you define full-time.
How do you define full-time?
I define full-time as a position that is at the forefront of one's mind within a day, an eight-hour basis. So I would say at certain days, the ART is there, though I can't account for every day in particular.
Okay. What else do you do in your free time?
So my day job.
Yes.
So during the day, I work as the manager of Heritage and Information Services for the Durst Organization. They're a real estate company based here in the city. So one could say in the corporate archivist realm.
Excellent. What's the best thing in your collection?
That's a doozy. The best thing in our collection, with my opinion at a moment in time right now, it was a purchase. It was a purchase at Swan's Auction House, and it was a photograph album from the Artcraft Strauss Sign Company, and it was documentation of signage in Times Square, 1890 to approximately 1922. Very cool. And the relationship that it has to the company is that, one, our company has our basis in Times Square, so some of the sites are now properties that we own. And then secondarily, Artcraft Strauss was once a tenant of the Durst Organization on West 57th Street, and I find that history very fascinating, and it also shows that change over time. And also, it was a lot of views that were relatively uncommon, that you have to really kind of go digging to find some of them. I also find the ingenuity and the creativity behind the signs, working with turn of the century technology, is very cool.
Excellent. Thank you, Ryan.
Thank you, Josh, and congratulations.
Thank you. Hey, Ben.
I can't wait to listen to your podcast.
Would you like to be interviewed for it?
Oh, is this your podcast right now?
It is, yes.
Wow. Hello, Internet.
Hello. I'm here at the New York Archivist Award Ceremony, New York Archivist Roundtable Award Ceremony. I'm here with who are you?
My name is Ben Fino Radden.
Nice name.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And what do you do, Ben?
I manage the digital repository for museum collections at the Museum of Modern Art.
Wow. So what exactly do you do? That's a mouthful of stuff.
Yeah, so MoMA has for, I would say, maybe like 3 years now, been working on a project thinking about if there was a repository software that was designed for museum collections and the needs of art conservators, what would that look like? Because all sort of repository systems that exist are very much designed for libraries and archives. It's just about like stuff. Whereas we wanted something that was, you know, designed to keep the data safe, but also expose useful and meaningful information to conservators. So we're at the stage now of building stuff. We're actually working with Artifactual Systems, the makers of Archivematica and Access to Memory, also known as ATOM. And so rather than build this repository from the ground up as something new, we're sort of funding some specific development for those systems and then building kind of a skin on top of it to make what, for all appearances, is a completely unique application. And really is in a lot of ways. So the nice thing is that this will sort of be a module of Archivematica and ATOM. That so once everything is said and done, it will all be free and open source. And you know, whoever, SF MoMA, whoever you like, they could just download it, install it on their infrastructure, and start using it. It won't be quite that simple because there are some very specific things, like an integration with TMS that's specifically using an internal MoMA API. But it's the blueprint for something that somebody could like tweak a very small amount and just start using. So we're looking to have, well, not looking to, we will have the first sort of beta, I guess, launching in May of 2014.
Excellent. So would you say that as MoMA was at the forefront of art in the early 20th century, that the archives of MoMA are now at the forefront of the world?
This is not MoMA archives. This is MoMA conservation. Those are two very different things. Conservation is the collections, and archives is the archives. So this system is very much designed for conservation's information needs and conservation's use cases. It's not at all designed as an archival system. It could, in theory, be adapted to the needs of the archives, but we're two very separate departments.
Interesting. Thank you, Ben.
Yes, no problem.
Hello, I'm Josh. I'm here with the New York Archivist Roundtable award ceremony. And who am I here with?
Alex Dury.
And what do you do, Alex?
I'm with AVPS doing metadata and digital preservation.
And how awesome is AVPS?
Oh, incredibly awesome.
Awesome.
I've heard that.
And it is pretty much true. So.
So what exactly is it that you do?
Working on software development for small archives, small medium archives, and metadata for broadcast.
Interesting. What do you spend your days doing then?
Mostly software development, getting ready for release very soon, working with a large-scale metadata project. So doing that, and then, yeah, keeping up with some small projects. So.
And how does this relate to archives?
Well, you have things like tools for, to expedite small archives, so instead of saying, oh, this is too hard, it's like, oh, let's use these tools that someone wrote for us, and then, we can do things like metadata management and checksumming, very easily, just drop it in and we're set to go.
So we make things easy for people.
Essentially, yeah. Taking things that are really hard right now, making them as easy as possible.
I commend you, Alex.
Thank you.
Thank you. I am good. How are you? And who are you?
I'm Julie May.
Welcome.
Thank you.
And what do you do, Julie May?
I'm the head of collection management at the Brooklyn Historical Society.
That sounds fascinating. There's lots of history in Brooklyn.
There is indeed.
So what is it that you do in your job every day?
Well, right now I'm curating an exhibition about the Superstorm Sandy. So that's all I'm doing right now. But usually I acquisition new Brooklyn-related collections, lots of photographs and works on paper and fine art and archival collections and weird things people find in their backyards.
Like meteors and airplanes and...
Somebody gave us a wooden ball It's better when they find beer bottles from, you know, breweries that existed.
So what's the most awesomest thing in your collection?
Well, you know, for a long time I was the photo archivist there, and so I have a bias towards the photography collection. So we have some amazing amateur photography collections that are taken just by regular people living in Brooklyn, which is sometimes the best perspective you can have on a place. But then we have some really kind of hokey things that you would expect us to have, but are still kind of surprising. Like we have the wax head and hands of Nat King Cole. But we also have a bass from Ebbets Field, and we're about to get home bass. So that's pretty cool. We have seats from Ebbets Field. I'm not really a big baseball person, so, but I'm told that that's been very cool.
I'm glad that somebody has informed you about the importance of Ebbets Field and the Brooklyn Dodgers and how much that means to Brooklyn and how there was no sports teams in Brooklyn until the Nets came and, wait, Barclays Center, ew.
Well, yes, it's true, but it's been really fascinating how Barclays Center has really brought this. I mean, we already have a lot of Brooklyn pride. Brooklyn already has this trendy following, but now it's become like a cult following with the Nets. And as much as it's a controversial structure and all of the, you know, things related to that, the build, it really has sort of transformed Brooklyn.
So is Paul Pierce past his prime?
Who?
Paul Pierce.
Who's that?
I am going to end this interview right now. Thank you, Julie May, for speaking with us.
You're very welcome.
Okay, I'm here at the New York Archivist Roundtable Award Ceremony, and who am I talking to?
Susan Woodland from the American Jewish Historical Society.
And what do you do at that job?
I work with three other archivists, and we are processing and making available 100 years of the history of UJA Federation of New York, 3,500 bankers' boxes.
And what do you do to make it accessible?
We pull stuff in by the hundreds, things that seem like they go together, and we put like things together and throw out duplicates and junk and create folder lists and finding aids and put stuff, you know, digitize whatever we can afford. And hopefully we'll get through every box before the money runs out. That's my goal.
That is an excellent goal. I think that's the goal of everybody. If we look at the federal government right now, that was their goal as well. What's the most awesomest thing in your collection?
Oh, well, we just found a 1957 wire recording, which I never even knew existed. And thanks to Andy Lancet at WNYC Archives, he put us in touch with someone who has the equipment to digitize that. And we got it, and it's up online. It's great. It's accessible. And it's a really wonderful workshop on how to raise money, which is what this Federation of Jewish Philanthropies did. They raised money for social service agencies around New York City. And so it's like 1950s style how they raise money. It's great. And they raised millions and millions. So they were successful at it. So that was cool.
Excellent. Thank you for talking.
Thank you.
Would you like to be interviewed for our podcast?
Okay.
I'm sorry, but you have to speak up.
Yes, I would love to be interviewed for your podcast.
Thank you. Mark that as confirmation. Okay, I'm here at the New York Archivist Roundtable Award Ceremony, and who are you?
My name is Bonnie Marie Sauer.
That's a beautiful name.
Why, thank you very much.
And what do you do?
I'm the chair of the awards committee this year, and normally I'm an archivist with the National Archives in New York City.
Normally, what does that mean?
Well, right now there's a government shutdown, so I'm here as citizen archivist Bonnie Marie Sauer.
I appreciate you, citizen.
Thank you very much.
What in God's green earth drove you into archives?
I used to do public relations for a library, and I kind of got to the point where I found myself jealous of the local history librarian because she got to play with the old historic documents, and that's kind of how I got there. I just like organizing information and making things accessible to people. So that was kind of what was important to me. Putting history in people's hands is what makes me happy.
Would you like to be interviewed for our podcast?
What was the question?
Would you like to be interviewed for our podcast?
Sure, I'd be happy to.
You were avoiding the question there.
I didn't hear what the question was.
That's the first stage of avoidance.
I'm very happy to speak with you.
Thank you. And who are you?
I'm Pamela Cruz, and I'm the president of Archivist Roundtable of Metropolitan New York, Inc., ART.
Wow, I don't know what to say here.
Just Pamela Cruz will do.
Okay, thank you. So what does that work entail?
The work entails supporting the Board of Directors of Archivist Roundtable, and we have been around since 1979. We currently have over 700 archivists from over 375 repositories around the New York metropolitan area. We provide monthly programming for our membership and for the general public. And we're very, very happy to be at New York Archives Week, one of our main initiatives, which has been going on since 1989. It's the 25th anniversary of New York Archives Week.
This is an excellent event.
Oh,
I'm very excited to be here.
Thank you very, very much. It's thanks to the hard work of our awards committee, which is chaired by Bonnie Marie Sauer. They put this all together, and it is one of three signature events at New York Archives Week. The other two being a symposium, which we had a couple of days ago. And we also have the K-12 Archives Education Institute. And that's a newer event. It's been around since 2010, and the symposium since 2011. So it's the only event that's been around since the inception of New York Archives Week is the award ceremony, which honors our colleagues and those who support archives in the New York metropolitan area.
That's excellent, and it sounds like with those new events in the past few years, New York Archivist Roundtable is really growing and becoming something big.
It really is. And one of the other things that's put us on the map is our advocacy team. We've had a lot of advocacy issues in the past couple of years. We ensure that archives are protected if they're in danger of anything happening to them due to closure of an archive. We support archivists and their initiatives, and we're very, very proud of our advocacy work.
Excellent. And everybody in New York should become a member, right?
Absolutely. You don't have to be an archivist to become a member of ART. You can join us as a friend of art.
That is awesome.
We highly recommend it, especially for artists, also other people who support archives and archivists. And it's really appropriate for folks in institutions, corporations, anywhere really that you have an archive, you want to start an archive, you can join as a friend if you're not an archivist yourself.
That is really important because there are lots of people creating stuff that needs to be saved, and there can be support from the New York Archivist Roundtable.
Yes, absolutely. We're here to help.
Thank you, Pamela. I'm here at the New York Archivist Roundtable. I'm here with the husband of Robin Katz. What's it like to be married to an archivist?
It's delightful. She's organized all of our books alphabetically by author. It was kind of a joint project, I guess. Our life is very exciting, adventurous.
We have a box labeled ephemera in our office.
That's true. Yeah. So as I said, exciting, adventurous. Beyond the most adventurous imaginations, I guess. I hope that describes it well.
So you have it here. Being married to an archivist is excellent. I'll just leave it at that.
You heard it here first.
Hi, this is Josh again. This second group of interviews was not recorded by myself nor by Jefferson. It was recorded by Seth Anderson, one of our consultants here at AV Preserve. And you may hear the voices of some of our other consultants. I think Kara Van Malsen is in there, and possibly Chris Lisinek in there as well. They went down to the Association of Movie Image Archivists annual meeting in Richmond, Virginia, that took place in November, and stole our podcast gear and went gonzo and interviewed a few people down there, some moving image archivists. So there's a two sections to what they recorded. The first group took place after the opening plenary of the conference, which was a big talk with several people discussing kind of the future of film preservation. And when I say film preservation, I mean not just preservation of film, but preservation using film. This has been a topic of a lot of discussion over many years in the field. And so the plenary caused a bit of a kerfluffle, I suppose, with some of the statements that people said. Some people, you know, being very much 100% for film and saying nothing else would stand, even if the original media was not film. And some people, you know, saying that this is not viable to do film, like for small organizations, they cannot do film, they cannot take care of film. Or if they have very large collections and they're a smaller organization, they can't do this. So there's a lot of conflicting opinions there. And so the first little group here was asking some questions of people afterwards to get their input on that. And then after that, you'll hear there's a bunch of kind of discussions with different archivists, different media archivists at the conference, just asking them who they are, what they do, and just get a sense of who's attending this conference and what the life of a media archivist is like. So hope you enjoy this one as well.
I'm Brian Graney with the Black Film Center Archive at Indiana University.
My name is Hannah Palin. I'm with the University of Washington Library Special Collections.
My immediate reaction is I was hoping to hear a lot more from Dino, but he made the most of his limited time. Definitely high impact.
You know, I came in at the very end, but I thought it was all really interesting, and it does seem like it's a debate that's very important to keep having in the community, so to speak. So, yeah.
Ann Wilkins, Wisconsin Public Television. So we can't afford to archive on film. It's not an option for us. So we're gonna digitize and hope for the best.
I'm Chantal from Orange Logic. I like David Walsh's session on, I thought it was very thought provocative, and I've seen a lot of tweets as well on, the reactions it was creating on, you know, do not preserve on tape, on, do not preserve on reel anymore. So yeah, that was thought provocative, so enjoyable.
Good.
Great.
Good start to the conference.
Yeah.
Yes, very good.
Thank you.
Well, let me give you a wider context than just the session and what was talked about. I think that there's an awful lot of poor metaphors that are put forward around the need for film stock. I think things don't work in the same way. The analogy between seeing a film on film and seeing the Mona Lisa in the Louvre, just it doesn't work. It's preposterous. The kind of disagreements I've had over the years with what I call the FIAF mentality over film. If you are really a purist about film being seen the way it was originally done, particularly silent era, then you would have people sitting on uncomfortable benches, not comfortable seats. You would have the projector would not be isolated in the booth. You would hear the clatter of the projector. If you're really a purist, you should be designing theaters like that. And then as far as film stock goes, I think I was at the last FIAF meeting where they brought in a film artist who works with film to make her art, and everyone in FIAF suddenly felt like they had a bond with her because she wanted film stock. But it's really it's a different animal, because we're entering a period of maker space things where you will be able to construct film to use on your own in your home, kind of thing. This is not the kind of film that archivists need. This is exactly the kind of film that film stock that that an artist needs, not an archivist, because it will be variable. It will not be exactly the same. So the FIAF mentality is that they can deal with these independent media artists only when they want film, when they think their needs are the same, but their needs aren't the same. And in fact, FIAF doesn't, you know, its total orientation is towards mass-produced cinematic works, not one-off like installation art. They don't even understand it, but they trot her out to talk about this because she wants to save film. But those are two different animals. So again, all of this stuff is full of these mixed metaphors, things where people see some type of common ground where it really isn't there.
Great. Thank you.
Okay.
I would ask for your name and affiliation, but I think we'll be able to pick you up. So, Walter Forsberg, tell me about the Hack Day.
Oh, it was really great, Seth Anderson. We got a lot accomplished, and it was just very exciting to have an AMI event where people get together and achieve something in lieu of just getting together to talk about past achievements.
And what did you achieve?
We worked on a Python script that looks at your disk image and tells you what kinds and how many audiovisual media files you might have in it.
Great. Thank you.
My name's Neil Stokes, and I am a video archivist at the Country Music Hall of Fame in Nashville, Tennessee.
Okay. So what brought you here to AMIA? How many times have you been here?
This is my second time coming to AMIA, and I'm working on a grant project that supplied funding for me to attend AMIA, so I was able to come. And one of the main reasons for attending is to be able to connect to other professionals in moving image archiving. Basically, it's really important coming from an institution where I work with only one other staff member who's involved with moving image materials, to be able to connect with other professionals who are doing similar work and learn from them, because we have limited experience ourselves, and this allows us to just learn, make connections, that sort of thing.
Great. So what have you found most interesting so far at the conference?
I found the Zero to Dam session, which was talking about institutions that were starting with relatively little digital assets and moving to digitization projects, creating a digital asset management system in a short period of time. I found that interesting because my institution's about to embark on a similar project. I also was involved in the Hack Day, which was, I thought, really fun, really illuminating, and also really different from the typical conference format, which is presenting work that's already been done. To be involved in doing something creative and collaborating with others on a project to create new work was, it just felt kind of refreshing, and I felt like I did learn some things.
What was your Hack Day project?
My group was working on a tool to work with metadata, and it went through a few iterations and I guess eventually turned into a tool that, if fully developed, would allow a sort of non-technically adept professional in an archive or repository to sort of ingest some metadata and create a custom schema based on that.
What do you think are your chances of winning the Hack Day jury?
Well, I'm not sure that we've actually created anything other than a description of the software, so I think that we stand a good chance, mostly based on our acronym and logo.
Okay, great. Thank you.
My name is Hannah Frost. I work at Stanford University Libraries. I manage the Stanford Media Preservation Lab.
Okay, and so you participated in the Hack Day. What sort of brought you on to participate?
Well, I know Kara, and she she had told me she was really interested in this project, in pulling it off for EMEA. And through a stroke of luck, I bumped into Rachel Frick, the director of the DLF, who came to me and said, you hang out in EMEA circles. I'm trying to figure out how DLF can get more connected with EMEA. And I said, I think you should talk to Kara Van Malsen, because she's trying to put together a Hack Day, which has DLF written all over it. So in that sense, I was involved kind of in getting it going. But I participated in the day itself because I think it's an amazing thing for EMEA to start doing, just to get people involved, getting their hands dirty with the tools that we are increasingly needing so that we can do digitally oriented work. Yeah.
Great. And what was your project?
Well, I had a tough time choosing, frankly. I'm not a developer, but I'm technical enough that I felt like I could contribute. I ended up working with Kara on a Metz example. I need to practice this description because we got to present it tonight. There was a use case for using Metz to document a digitized video. And there were some Metz profiles on the Library of Congress website that touched on media, but never really covering all the technical aspects of the conversion process itself. So Kara and I kind of dove right in and pulled apart some of the existing things that we had found on the Metz site, but also ReVTMD, the schema that is out there now for video technical metadata. So we pulled apart different pieces of existing schemas and produced a sample Metz instance for a digitized video file, or tape to file. And we think it's innovative because it's capturing all the technical processes.
Great. And so what has been your highlight so far at EMEA? What's been the best session or interaction you've had so far?
Well, so many interactions. I get to see all my buddies here and hear about what they're up to. And there's a lot of, people are doing some really amazing work in our field. And it just, of course, you can read about it online, but it's nothing like talking about it over beer. basically.
It's a common theme here.
we just find new ways to collaborate. You do that face-to-face in ways that you can't do otherwise. And one of my favorite sessions, frankly, I mean, it's going to sound self-serving, but it was the one that I just was participated in this morning, because we were, it was about the AV Artifact Atlas, and it's the BAVAC project funded by the NEH to incorporate it into QC tools. And we got what we were looking for as presenters out of it. We got a lot of audience feedback, ideas. So it was really very community oriented, which is what the whole point of the Atlas is in the first place. So
that's great. I love the Atlas.
Yay.
Yeah. All right. Thank you very much.
Cool. Hi, I'm Siobhan Hagen. I'm the audiovisual preservation specialist for UCLA Library. And so far at EMEA in Richmond, I have had a lot of fun with the small gauge committee. They're the ones that put on the two-day workshop that I helped with Tuesday and Wednesday, where it was basically small gauge projecting and maintenance, and I was helping more with VCR and VHS tapes. So that was just a morning on that, but I was just sort of helping out in other ways to running the CVS for, isopropyl alcohol. And the committee meeting went well. We had that today. That was one of the more agenda full and fun one. And then of course archival screening night is always a blast. I'm looking forward to the parties tonight. One is the film task force.
Oh, they're having a party?
Yeah, they're having that at Penny Lane, and then and there's a party at a gallery nearby for the Center for Home Movies. Yeah.
So why do you think it's important for EMEA to continue advocating small gauge film preservation and work for that?
I think part of the preservation and part of making it relevant also is the presentation of it. And that's why you know, sort of working with the task force, the film advocacy task force. That's really important because the context of how, you know, small gauge was shown is really important to understand its value. But of course, I'm more of a person that's into the ephemeral films, so, and preserving those and orphan films, and they're typically found on small gauge, so that's really important. And there's an interest, there's always an interest with the communities of where these, you know, small gauge films were made or made by people from those communities. So it's a big deal, I think. Yeah.
Okay, that's it for our podcast, this special holiday edition of More Podcast, Less Process. I hope you all have a happy holidays and keep listening, and we'll have some new episodes in the new year. Got some exciting ones coming up. So see you soon.